Hi, Women of Strength. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to share something that's really close to my heart. If you're planning a VBAC or even just starting to think about one, you don't have to piece everything together on your own. You don't have to find every blog or hunt down a specific podcast episode. The VBAC Link Parent Prep Course was created by our founders, Julie and Megan, who are doulas and VBAC moms themselves. I actually took it when I was preparing for my own VBAC, long before I was a host of the podcast, just as a mom who needed clarity, confidence, and evidence-based information. So I can say, from a personal standpoint, that I know you'll love it. We also have a VBAC birth plan guidebook with a drag and drop template, and that's the exact template I used for my own VBAC birth. It made communicating with my care team so much more smooth. So if you're looking for practical, supportive VBAC prep from people who truly get it, you can find both the course and the guidebook at thevbaclink.com. All right, let's get into today's episode.
Happy Wednesday, Women of Strength. You are listening to the VBAC Link. I am your host today, Paige, joined by my co-host, Lily. Hi, Lily.
Hey, girl. Hey.
The highlight of my week.
Oh, this is so fun. It is so late at night for me, Women of Strength. It is like 10:30 at night. We just recorded back-to-back episodes. I feel more tired doing this right now than I do when I'm at a birth all night. So... Oh, what
because
a wild
we're
ride.
Invested. It's the mental
we
energy.
Are. Yes, right? Exactly. Paige, you, speaking of births, you were just at a twin birth recently. How'd that go?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know if I can say in one sentence or a couple minutes how it went. It was like the wildest roller coaster, but ended on such a beautiful high. And the takeaway that I will give you all is number one, twin gestation is similar to singleton gestation. So that's something that I've come to know, and having a patient provider to let you go into, not let you, but to support you going into spontaneous labor. So this mama, when she, her babies were born at 39 weeks and 3 days, and the position of babies. A lot of providers will tell you that both babies have to be head down, or you have to deliver in the OR. But I'm so lucky to work at this place in Seoul, Korea called the Home Clinic. And it functions like a birth center, but it also has an OR on site. And it's just very, very unique. But they're so patient and so hands-off. And the midwives are so incredibly skilled that this mama ended up having an OP baby A and then a transverse baby B. And just with some different things, there was some manual rotation and babies were able to be both born vaginally, and mama was so strong. She didn't give up. We were all working together as a team. There were some really rough moments. There were some beautiful moments, and I'm just incredibly proud of my client, a first-time mom who initially was at a different Korean hospital, didn't want to drive to this clinic. She was so afraid of the drive, and through education, and I didn't push the clinic on her, but she started to understand what some things were that her provider was talking to her about that she didn't, that didn't sit well with her, and the better care that she saw that she could get elsewhere, and she switched providers, and it just all worked out so beautifully. So, yeah.
We talk so much about preventing primary cesareans when we can, and you got to experience that, which is so cool.
It just so truly, like, it would have been a C-section almost anywhere else. It just would have been. And when she looked at me, and we had C-section talks multiple times throughout the labor because it looked like it might have been going that way. And there were some stuff on the monitors, like some readings that other providers would have been really jumpy about. But this team was really patient. And she looked me in the eyes and she was like, I want to fight for this vaginal delivery, anything but a C-section. And I was like, girl, let's go. Let's go. Anything but a C-section. That's music to my ears. Let's do it. If it had gone to a C-section, I would have been there for her as well. Because if you don't know this, I have had all C-sections. I have never had a vaginal delivery. And I know that they can be beautiful too. But because I have had all C-sections, I'm going to fight for that vaginal delivery for you. Because I know they can be rough. So
yeah,
we fought.
What a gift.
It was magic.
Yeah. What a gift. That's so amazing. Women of Strength. Well, we have, speaking of VBAC stories, we have a VBAC story for you today. And I'm just excited for you to hear from another mama who has walked the walk and and has some really unique pieces of her story in being a type 1 diabetic and fighting for a birth that she wasn't necessarily guaranteed.
Yeah, exactly. We have Alexis with us today, who, like Lily said, has type 1 diabetes, and a lot of times that can be associated with providers telling you your baby is going to be big. And we are very familiar with that as VBAC moms. And so when that's sometimes combined with type 1 diabetes, then it can be a bit of a battle. And that's what Alexis faced. And she talks a little bit about shoulder dystocia and just how she navigated that all. But before we get into that, Lily has a review of the week for you today.
I sure do. This one comes from Facebook. So Women of Strength, first of all, Paige and I are craving community connection from you. So please leave us a review. We get your DMs all the time, and I feel like they get lost when we go to like read something for the VBAC link. So leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. You can review us on Facebook. We have a Google profile as well that I believe you can find us on as well. So leave us your reviews. We would love to read them on the podcast. We love hearing from you. It means so much to us. And it also helps people find the podcast that may not have been listeners before. I know that that's exactly how I found the VBAC link back before I was the co-host, obviously, was searching for VBAC in my podcast library, and podcasts that have more reviews are the ones that bubble to the top. So thank you for your support of the work that we do and the reviews that you leave. But this comes from a doula. It comes from Doula Mama on Facebook, and it says, I love utilizing the VBAC link as a resource for my clients. Their information is evidence-based, empowering, and incredibly helpful for families considering VBAC. The Advanced VBAC Doula Certification has also been very valuable in shaping how I walk alongside and support my clients throughout their journey. So if you didn't know, we also certify doulas. So if you're a doula listening, we even have, I think, a couple like chiropractors in there, pelvic floor PTs that have done our certification, which is really special. I would wager to bet maybe even a midwife or two. That would be fun to think about. But if you are curious about VBAC education, I know some husbands have even taken our doula course, which is so sweet. So that is available to you, Women of Strength. And you can also find VBAC certified doulas at our website at thevbaclink.com. And there is a doula finder there. So you can look for a certified VBAC doula near you. So that is that. Let's dive into Alexis's story. We'll be back with her. Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
Okay, welcome back. We have Alexis with us. So I'm going to read her bio and then we're going to jump into her stories. Alexis is a type 1 diabetic mom of three boys. She has had an unmedicated vaginal birth, C-section, and unmedicated VBAC. She dealt with some pretty unexpected issues that we will get into. Things, yes. But still managed to have her VBAC. So we will talk about all of that, and we'll turn the time over to you, Alexis, to share your stories.
Yay, thank you. I'm super excited, and I will let you guys know right off the bat that you were in my ear like the entire time that I was pregnant with my third, which is my VBAC baby. So I had hour-long drives to take my other kids to swim lessons, and you guys were in my ear. It was great. I probably annoyed my kids, but it's fine. They were only 1 and 3. It's good.
Oh, we love that.
Yes.
So fun.
So we'll start with my first. So he was born July of 2020. So wonderful COVID baby. My husband and I had been married for like 2 months when I got pregnant. My doctors had told me it would take a long time because I had been on birth control for 10 years. I was pregnant 6 weeks later. Like, quit taking pills, was pregnant in 6 weeks. And I was like, oh, well, that was fast. So found out right before Christmas. I surprised everybody at Christmas, including my husband, with the fact that I was pregnant. And then very shortly after, everything shut down. So we had none of the appointments were together. I am type 1 diabetic, so I had to see a maternal fetal medicine doctor. I could not have my husband on a FaceTime. I couldn't have it recorded, nothing. So all of those appointments were totally on my own. My OB at my last sonogram at 36 weeks and 4 days allowed my husband to come in. And that was like the only sonogram he got to see in person. The other ones were like pictures I had taken on my phone and like sent to him during the appointment. So that was like super hard. And I know all the other COVID moms like know what I'm talking about. With him, like everything was great. I had an endocrinologist that I met because I was pregnant. Prior to her, I had just been managing with my family doctor because I've been diabetic for a long time. And I was like, I know what I need. Like, I don't need an endo. That endocrinologist ended up not being on my side. So my A1C at conception was 6.7, which is a little bit high, but not really. They want you at a 6 or lower during pregnancy. I got it down to a 6.1 within my first trimester, and I maintained that the whole pregnancy. The endo told my OB and my MFM at 36 weeks that my blood sugars were wildly out of control and I needed to be induced at 37 weeks, no later. I had always been told by my prior OB that diabetics, type 1s, do not go past 37 weeks. You will be induced at 37 weeks. Cut and dry, that is what it is. And I was like, okay, well, I'm a first-time mom. Like, I don't know. Sure, sounds great. I'm going to trust you guys. Big, big mistake. So 37 weeks, I went in for my induction. I was dilated, I think, to like a 1 maybe. So not very dilated. I technically was 36 and 6 because I went on Friday night and they were like, okay, we're going to start you with Cervidil to soften and ripen your cervix. And I was like, okay, sounds great. My doctor told me to eat like a light lunch and it's now 7 o'clock. Like, can I eat? And they were like, a nurse was taking my blood pressure as they're telling me this. And another nurse is like, oh yeah, this is going to take days. What? Days? And I was like, my blood pressure shot through the roof. And another nurse is like, I think we're going to check that again in like a couple of minutes. And I was like, days? I am not going to sit here in labor for days. What are you talking about? I'm like, oh no, that's not happening. And they're like, okay, well, what's your birth plan? And I was like, not a C-section. And they were like, okay, anything else? And I was like, I don't want a big needle in my back, so whatever that and not a C-section entails. And they were like, okay, sounds great. So they placed the Cervidil. My lovely husband went to get us food because the cafeteria was closed at that point. So he drove around and everything closed early to like 4 different Subways to get me a sandwich. So he gets back. We're eating. I had eaten maybe half of it. And I felt like the biggest kick I've ever felt. And my water broke. And I was like, I did not just pee myself. And my mom's sitting there and she's like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm wet. And she's like, okay, call the nurse. So I call the nurse in and she's like, oh, I'm sure you just sneezed and peed. Like, that's not your water. Let's check though. And I was like, okay. So she lays me back. And she's like, yeah, this isn't your water. Give a fake cough. And I cough and it gushes and covers her like chest down. And she's like, oh, maybe that was your water. You can't eat now. And I was like, oh, okay. Sounds great. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, Mom, I'm not feeling so hot. Like, I'm getting really hot and I got to puke. And I am a total puker. I have always been a puker. And my mom's like, okay, and grabs this bucket. Like, I think it was actually to, like, wash the pump parts in. But that was the first thing she found. And the nurse wasn't in there. And so I puked into that. My husband's calling. And the nurse comes in. And she's like, what's going on? And I'm all, and she's all, oh, that's what's going on. So, like, okay, great. Like, what do I do now? Because I just took insulin for my sandwich, and now I'm throwing it up, and you guys don't want me to eat, and I don't want an IV. And so they're like, well, you can have clear liquids, so you can have apple juice. And I'm like, okay, sure, whatever, bring me the juice. So I down apple juice, and I'm like, okay, we're good. Like, got that balanced back out, not a problem. Labor's progressing. Nothing really major happened. I went completely unmedicated. My water had broken at 8:30 at night, and I delivered my baby at 6:29 a.m. 6:24 a.m. on 7:25. So I'm a numbers person, and so that was like super cool that it was an hour and a minute before the day and the month. So I pushed for a really long time with him, like 3 hours. They had me flat on my back pushing. I finally delivered him because my mom was like, this isn't working. And she got behind me and pushed me up so that I was sitting more upright. And he was out in like 5 pushes after that. Crazy how just changing that little bit of position, like he was born, he was just fine. He did have a couple of low blood sugars, which was kind of expected. My blood sugars were not as controlled as they should have been during labor because I was like super adrenaline high, and then it was tanking, and then it would crash. Like, so it was a roller coaster. But he had a couple of blood sugars, nothing major. I had like a minor tear. I think I got like 2 stitches. Like, it was super nothing major. And then like everybody just cleared the room. Like, as fast as they all came in to deliver, they all just booked it out. And I was like, oh, okay, peace out. Like, that's okay. Because it was COVID, I wasn't able to do any, like, in-person classes or anything, really. And the online stuff was still, like, coming out and kind of weird. And so I didn't take any classes. I was like, it'll be fine. Like, I know babies. I haven't breastfed, but I'll figure it out. Like, it'll be fine. And so I was nursing him, and I actually did not have him positioned correctly, and so his nose was covered by my breast, and so he had breastification. So thankfully, the nurse that had admitted me the night before had come in to check on SB. She was like, I was so sure that I was going to be delivering you this morning or later today in my shift, and she was like, oh my god, baby's not good. And so she grabbed him and got him going and stuff again. And we ended up having him in the nursery for a couple of hours just for them to monitor extra. And she was like, so I don't want you to feel any mom guilt, but you were the cause of that because you were exhausted. The lights were low. You didn't know what you were doing. She was like, so it's partially your fault, but it's also partially our fault at the hospital because we weren't there to make sure that you knew what you were doing. So I'm so sorry. He is totally fine. Rambunctious 5-year-old. Like, it didn't have any effect on him. Thank God. It was very short lived. And we actually did not tell very many people about that happening for a long time. And still some people like don't fully know. So if you know me in real life, now you know. So that was my first. So super fun.
I mean, that's hard. I would argue that was like not your fault at all. Because you didn't know. No mom would intentionally do that. So
no.
I mean, that's my piece about that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I learned quickly. You make sure. So it was a good learning lesson, I guess, to happen at the hospital. But yeah, there's that thing. That was my first baby. I got my medical records shortly after having him because I had applied for life insurance and it was declined because of what was in there from my endocrinologist. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So her medical records were completely wrong. Like, she had in there that I had cancer. She had in there that I, had wildly unmaintained blood sugars for an extended amount of time, just all kinds of stuff. So those records had to get sealed because she left the practice right before I got those records and nobody else would go in and fix them. So there's a big chunk of my medical records that are completely sealed due to her. And so that made some of the other stuff a little bit harder with my other pregnancies because I changed endocrinologists and they're like, well, why can't I see those records? Well, and so that kind of made like a little bit of a pain, but nothing too major. So my second baby, I had the same OB, I had the same MFM, I had the same endocrinologist. Oh, I forgot to mention, in my first birth, from the extended pushing, I did end up bursting a vessel in my left eye, which from what I know is like pretty common. My eye specialist was not concerned about that. He was like, it's totally fine. It happens all the time. Not a big deal. When I got pregnant with my second baby, he was born August of 22. So they are 2 years and 10 days apart. My MFM had said, well, because you burst that vessel in your eye, I'm not comfortable with you having another vaginal delivery. So this one will be a C-section. And that was at 12 weeks. Like, I was 12 weeks pregnant and he was like, this is what it'll be. And I was like, no, it will not. So unfortunately, we are in a pretty rural area, so we don't have many choices for MFMs unless we decide to travel out of state, which is kind of a pain in the butt. So he was what it was. I saw him again at my 22-week anatomy and echocardiogram scan because I did that with all the babies because of my diabetes. It can increase the risk of heart issues for baby. And he was like, well, your fluid's pretty high. And I was like, okay, so what does that mean? And he was like, well, your blood sugars aren't controlled then. And I was like, I have a 6.0 A1C. Like, they're pretty controlled. And I wouldn't give him any of my blood sugar logs. I had a separate endocrinologist that was managing it. I was like, I'm not giving you those. Last time I gave them to you, there were too many people trying to control it. It was chaos. No, that's not what you're hired for. You are monitoring baby. Nothing else. And so he and I kind of got into it. And my husband was able to go to these appointments and he was like, you need to be nice to him. And I was like, no, I'm paying for him. I hired him. So I had the high fluid and was diagnosed with polyhydramnios, which I was like, okay, whatever. So they wanted to start my NSTs twice a week early this time at like 30 weeks, I think, instead of 32. And I was like, okay, whatever. So I had gone to one of them at like 34 weeks and baby's baseline wasn't where they wanted it. And so they sent me over to labor and delivery and they did a BPP, the biophysio profile, whatever. And the sonographer was like, you don't have extra fluid. What are they talking about? Your fluid's great. And I was like, oh, okay. Does it just go down on its own? And she was like, well, I'm not a doctor. I can't talk about that. And I was like, okay. So the next day I coincidentally had an appointment with the MFM and I was like, hey, what's my fluid at? And I didn't mention anything about the appointment the day before. And he was like, oh, it went up more. Like, you're at 35 now. And I was like, okay. Well, yesterday it wasn't high at all. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, yesterday I had a BPP done and it was normal. And he's like, oh, well, baby just hadn't peed yet. And I was like, I don't think that's how that works, but okay, sure, whatever. You're the doctor. Well, all right. So things continued on. Baby started measuring big, and at my 36-week appointment with the MFM, he claimed baby was weighing over 10 pounds already. And I was like, that math just doesn't math to me. I've gained the exact same amount of weight as my last birth. Like, everything feels pretty normal, like the same. I don't think that's the case. And he was like, nope, that's what it is. You need to have a C-section. There's no way you can birth a 10-pound baby, especially if we wait another 2 or 3 weeks. And I was like, 2 or 3 weeks? And he's like, well, yeah, ACOG changed, so now we don't recommend it until 38 or 39 weeks. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, well, that's still not what I want, so I'm not going to go forward with that. And he's like, well, that's what I'm recommending to your OB. And I was like, okay. So my OB then, I had an appointment with like a couple days later, and he's like, you are the only patient that the MFM has ever called me on. He's extremely concerned. Like, you need to have a C-section. And I was like, I don't want one though. Like, that is not what I want. That's the last thing. Like, why can't I just try? Like, can I have another sonogram? Can we have a second opinion? And he was like, no, we can't do another sonogram. The MFM said it, that's what it is. And I was like, he was like, their machines are way more accurate than ours. And I was like, then why are yours the one that starts my due date? Like, that doesn't make sense. And he was like, well, that's just what it is. So we're going to go with what the MFM recommends. So what day do you want to set up for your C-section? And I was like, I don't want to. I'm going to go home and talk to my husband. So came home, talked to him, and my husband is a very like laid back guy. And he's like, well, doctors know, like, we should probably listen to him. And so we went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And he was like, it's fine. Like, it's just surgery. And I was like, it is a big needle in my back. That is my problem. Like, no. And so finally I was like, okay, fine. We'll schedule it. It's not what I want. I'm not happy with this. I don't think this is what I should do, but fine. So we scheduled it for 38 weeks on the dot. I went in, I walked into the OR, and I was like, I don't want to be here. You guys need to give me whatever nausea meds you can, because I am a puker and I am going to puke. And they were like, well, you haven't had anything to eat since midnight. You'll be fine. And I was like, no, I am a puker. You need to give me nausea meds. And they were like, well, here's your little seltzer. Like, you'll be fine. And I was like, it's going to come right back up. I'm telling you. And they're like, no. I'm like, okay. So they sit me on the little table to do the spinal. And the anesthesiologist is like, she was super nice. And the nurse in front of me was super nice. And so the nurse in front of me is like holding my shoulders, and she's standing straddled in front of me, and my legs are between her legs. And the anesthesiologist goes to place it, and my left leg just whoosh, boom, and kicks the nurse straight in the crotch. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't know how that happened. And the anesthesiologist is like, oh, guess that's not right, and pulls it out. And I'm like, what? And so at this point, like, I am sobbing because this, like, I did not want to be in there. They didn't allow any of my support people in there with me to get the epidural placed. So I am like sobbing, and the nurse is like delicately like wiping my tears away after I just like cooter kicked her. Like, I am so sorry. And she's like, it's okay, sweetheart. Like, it'll be fine. Like, wiping my tears away. And I'm like, no, it's not. So the anesthesiologist tries to place it a second time, and they're shooting pain from my hip all the way down to my foot on my left side again. And I'm like, that's not right. And she's like, oh, okay, well, let's do it one last time. And I was like, if you don't get it this time, I'm not doing it. Like, I don't normally give people two chances on an IV. You're sticking a needle in my back, lady. Like, I should have kicked you out last time. So she finally gets it placed, and I'm sitting up still, and she's like, okay, I'm going to watch the monitors and stuff, but if you start to feel nauseous, you're going to be able to tell me before the monitor does. And I was like, bag. And she's all, what? And she is in the process of laying me back, and I turned to the side and just started puking. And she's like, oh, you really do need nausea meds right now. And I was like, yeah. So they pushed, I don't know, 3 or 4 different nausea meds. And then they couldn't push something else, and they had to get it from the pharmacy in the hospital because they didn't have it stocked in the OR. And I was like, how do you not have all the meds that you need in the OR? Like, that doesn't make sense. So they finally get me good enough to where I'm not totally puking. And they, like, put the drape up, and I'm like, I don't want the drape. I want to be able to see. And they're like, nope, you have to have the drape. And I was like, I want a clear one then. And they're like, nope, we don't have that. I'm like, great. So they get my husband in, and he's, like, taking pictures, and the anesthesiologist has my phone and is taking pictures. And I'm like, I know I was conscious, but I was, like, they had pumped so much into my system so quickly that it was, like, a daze. Like, it was so just, like, I was floating above my body almost. Like, such a weird out-of-body experience. And so they go to deliver him, and they had to have a nurse get a step stool to apply enough pressure to get him out. And I was like, if I have extra water, shouldn't he just, like, bloop, out? And they're like, no, that's why we gotta apply the extra pressure. And I was like, it doesn't make sense, but okay. And I'm like, what does he weigh? Like, how big is he? That's the only thing I care about right now. Like, how big is he? And they're like, he's 8 pounds, 7 ounces. And I was like, so he's only 2 ounces more than my first. And my OB is standing there, and he looks over the curtain at me, and he goes, I'm sorry, we were wrong. And I was like, if I could move my arms right now, I would punch you in the face. Like, I am so angry with you. And then, like, I didn't get skin to skin in the OR. I got baby, like, on my face for maybe 5 minutes. And then they had my husband and him go into the recovery room. And I was like, why can't he stay with me? Like, I told you if I had to have this, I wanted him with me. And they were like, well, we have to move you more to sew you back up. And I was like, my husband can stay here with the baby. Like, why? And they were like, no, we can't do that. And I was like, oh, so I'm lied to again. Cool. So they then took, like, finished stitching me up. And that's where it gets, like, even more fuzzy. Like, I fell asleep, and I don't remember 95% of the day. Like, there's pictures and videos, and I'm like, huh. I was texting my brother, and I'm like, huh.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
I don't remember that conversation. So glad I didn't tell you any big dark secrets, because no idea what I was doing. So the C-section wasn't necessarily traumatic, but it was very unwanted and unnecessary. And I was very bullied into it by the medical professions. So it was super annoying.
And I think this is important to remember that even a scheduled C-section is hard. Like, there's things that can happen that even in a controlled plan setting, this is what I think a lot of first-time parents, especially in Korea with like this, the culture is so heavily like, oh, C-section, like just have a C-section. So moms, first-time moms opt for that. But it's like, okay, they might not get it for a good stick the first time. You might feel like garbage right after. You might this, you might that. Like, there are different twists and turns that even a scheduled C-section can take in a controlled environment like that. So thank you for sharing your experience with all that.
Yeah, it was not lovely or what I wanted. And it definitely, like with my first, I didn't have any like baby blues or anything. But with my second after that C-section, like, I definitely feel like had I let it and not like forced myself to get out, like I would have had more of like the baby blues and stuff. And the recovery was harder. Like, I had a 2-year-old at home. My husband, because of work this time, only got 2 weeks off. And so at 2 weeks, I was home by myself with both kids. And I couldn't lift anything. Like, I was like, cool, I can lift baby, that's it. And so it was so much harder. And my husband is a worrywart. And so if I didn't respond to his text or whatnot, like, right away, he was worried that I had, like, split my stitches open and I was, like, gutted on the bathroom floor. And so it was awful for both of us. And then we weren't sure if we were going to have more. Like, we were like, I don't know, maybe we're done, maybe we're not, I don't know, we'll see. And then we decided to, well, we'll just stop birth control and see what happens. And I was like, well, I'm going to be pregnant, that's what's going to happen, but okay, we'll see. So then we ended up pregnant with number 3, and I was like, I do not want another C-section. And I had asked my OB, I was like, can I have a VBAC? And he was like, I will cautiously say it's possible for you to TOLAC. And I was like, what's TOLAC? And he's all, trial of labor after C-section. And I'm like, okay, sounds good, I guess. And so I had kept that OB because in our practice, like in the main practice, it's difficult to switch between the OBs unless you just conveniently can only schedule on their scheduled day off. And so, but you have to try and figure out what day that is. The receptionist won't tell you. So that was like a fun attempt, but I was like, well, whatever. So for baby 3, I kept the same OB. I kept the same endo as baby 2. Because he was like, you know what you're doing. This is baby number 3. Send me your numbers once a month. If we need to adjust more or you need me between there, send me a message and I'll get back to you. And I was like, okay, great. Thanks. That's all I need. MFM, they changed. So it was no longer a privately owned practice, but they were now part of the bigger hospital. And so there was 3 of them. And I was like, okay, cool. I don't want to see the first one. Like, I don't want to see Dr. 1. I don't care who I see, just not him. So I started seeing Dr. 2 for the MFM's office. And, like, he was funny. He was great. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I can do this. And he was like, I don't see any reason for you to not have a VBAC. Like, I don't know why you had a C-section the first time. And I was like, well, because of Dr. 1. And he was like, yeah, I've heard that quite a bit lately. And I was like, well, I fully blame him and I don't want to see him. And he was like, okay, well, don't see him then. And I was like, cool, thanks. So baby 3, we are bumping along, have our 20-week appointment for the anatomy scan. And they're like, you know, he's not positioned properly for us to do a good echo. Like, how about you come back in 2 weeks? And I'm like, you guys are an hour away each direction for me. Like, I don't want to come back in 2 weeks, but okay, fine. I'll come back in 2 weeks. And then because of their scheduling, they couldn't get me back until 24 weeks. And I was like, well, that's your problem, not mine. So here I am. So at 24 weeks, they did the echo and they determined that baby had a small hole in his heart, which, okay, not a big deal. It's a small VSD. I'm not worried. Then they also determined that he had a suspected ARSA, which is an aberrant right subclavian artery. So what that means is instead of your heart, so you have your heart and your blood vessels, your arteries come up, and then the one that comes up on the right side should go to the right arm. The one that comes up on the left side should go to the left arm. The way his worked was the right one was coming up more on the left, and it was circling back behind his trachea and then down his right arm. So that can cause, like, worst case scenario, breathing and swallowing issues. So at that appointment, they were like, we think that this is what baby has. We need to monitor you extra now, and you need to see the pediatric cardiologist. And I was like, oh, okay, sounds good. So they scheduled me a week out to meet with her. And then she had to do something different. And so it ended up being like 2 or 3 weeks out from that. So I was 26, 27 weeks. And she did it. And she was like, you know what? From what I can tell, I believe he does have the ARSA. So I will need to see him 2 weeks after birth. And I was like, okay, does this affect me having a VBAC? And she was like, no, as far as I'm concerned, he's fine. Like, everything's working. It's just an abnormality. It's not anything major. He's not going to need surgery. Like, it's just an abnormality. It can cause issues later in his life. And I was like, okay, sounds good. Like, we can do that. And then she was like, just so you know, Dr. One is the one that's going to be coming in right after me to finish this growth scan. And I was like, no, I don't want to see him. And she was like, well, Dr. Two isn't here. And I was like, what do you mean he's not here? And she was like, you'll have to talk to the front about that. And I was like, okay. So Dr. One comes in, finishes the growth scan, and he notes that baby also has an increased velocity between two of the heart valves. And I'm like, okay. What does that mean? He's like, oh, it's nothing for you to worry about. Okay. So then I find out at the end of my appointment when I go to schedule with Dr. Two that, oh no, Dr. Two is now at another location and is only accepting cash pay patients. And I was like, how can he switch and not notify me in the middle of my pregnancy? I'm pretty sure that's like, I don't know, not allowed. And they're like, well, there's still an MFM that can take care of you here, so it's perfectly fine. And I was like, no, I don't want to see him. I want to see the doctor that I've been going to. And so I ended up not making my next appointment, and I went and talked to my regular OB, and he was like, what? Let me text Dr. Two. Like, I got him. I'll get you an appointment. And so he called me, and he's like, how does Thursday at 2 sound? And I was like, fine, as long as it's with Dr. Two. And he's like, yep. And I'm like, okay, golden. I'll be there. Not that. Like, that's fine. So in the meantime, I had called the pediatric cardiologist to see, like, hey, what is this increased velocity? And she was like, what are you talking about? And she had no idea about it. And so then she went back through, and she was like, oh, Dr. One did note that, so we're just going to keep an eye on it. I'm like, okay. At this point, I have also been diagnosed with polyhydramnios with extra fluid. And I'm like, okay, well, it's just a little extra water. Not a big deal. My weight gain is still pretty much right on for what it was with my last two. I'm not worried. I'm just going to be extra stretchy and gushy. That's fine. So then we get to 35 weeks. And so I'm 35 weeks. They've been monitoring. And they do another like mini echo to monitor him. And they're like, okay, you need to deliver at the big hospital now instead of the little, like the local one. And I was like, why? Well, the pediatric cardiologist now wants to see him right after birth. And I was like, why are you guys changing this on me at 35 weeks? Like, I'm supposed to deliver in the next 2 to 4 weeks. And they're like, well, it is what it is. And I was like, okay, can I get in with any of the doctors at the big hospital? So I at least meet them before they're up in my business. And they're like, well, probably not. Okay, cool. So my regular OB maintains taking care of me, even though he doesn't have rights at the other hospital. And so I was like, all right, I am going into labor on my own. Like, that is what it is. So I started having membrane sweeps at 37 weeks on the dot because I guilt tripped my OB. I was like, you caused me to have a C-section last time. I did not want it. You will help me go into labor this time on my own. And he was like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want membrane sweeps. I have to come in twice a week for NSTs. I want a membrane sweep after every single one. And he was like, how about we do a membrane sweep before so we can monitor if it gives you contractions? And I was like, sounds great. Do it. So at 37 weeks, I started having a membrane sweep twice a week. So like the first one obviously wasn't very successful. The second one was a little bit more. And like each time it just got a little bit more. And so I was like, okay, like that's fine. And I had started having contractions at like 37 weeks and a couple days, 8 minutes apart, consistently. And I continued that until I went in to have him. So I was like, all right, whatever. It's fine. And I didn't notice them most of the time. So at 38, the MFM was like, okay, let's schedule you. Do you want to go in Friday or Saturday? And I was like, I don't know. And my husband was like, let's go Friday. And then the MFM looked at the doctors on call and he's like, I don't like that doctor. You're going in Saturday. And I was like, okay, sounds good. So that was on Monday. So I had it scheduled for Saturday. Thursday night, we had spaghetti for dinner. And like I had taken a really nice relaxing shower and just done like all of the stuff. And I had been doing the dates. I had been doing the red raspberry leaf tea. I had been walking. We had been just doing all the things except for castor oil. That was where I was like, yeah, I draw the line there. And so we went to bed and I woke up and I was like, that's not right. And I had like a bigger contraction and I was like, ooh, okay. And I sat up and I was like, I'm going to get a drink of water. And I got a drink of water and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be sick. And I went to run to my bathroom and I puked all over the bathroom floor before I turned the light on. And I, of course, slipped and fell straight on my back in my spaghetti puke. So I had my hair like braided, got it all in my hair. My husband woke up to me thudding on the floor. I like army crawled to the toilet so I could finish puking. And the only thing I could say was light, 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 so that he didn't step in my puke. And so I'm like, maybe I'm in labor because I puked with the first one. Like, I don't know. So this is like 2 a.m. So he starts calling my mom. And then my mom didn't answer. He calls my dad. My dad didn't answer. He calls the house phone. They didn't answer that. So he calls my little brother that lives at home still. And so he's walking upstairs to go tell mom and dad. And they're like, okay, call the hospital, see if they want you to go in. So I call the hospital. And they're like, well, did you lose consciousness? I'm like, no. And they're like, okay, did you land on your belly? I'm like, no, I landed flat on my back. And they're like, okay. And how far apart are your contractions? And I'm like, 8 minutes. And they're like, okay, we don't want you to come in unless they're less than 5 apart. And I was like, even though I slipped and fell? And they're like, well, you didn't lose consciousness, so you're fine. And I was like, okay, it's kind of shocking, but whatever. And like, I still felt baby moving, so I wasn't worried. And I had an appointment Friday morning for another NST, so I had that. And she did another like really aggressive membrane sweep. And she was like, this was a good one. Like, there is blood. It is good. And I was like, okay, great. And nothing happened that night. And I was like, oh, okay, well, whatever. Saturday morning, call the hospital because they're over an hour away to make sure they have room for me to be induced. And they're like, nope, we don't have room. We'll call you back. And I'm like, okay, sounds good. My grandma had flown in to surprise me to help take care of my other two kiddos. And so spent the day with her and my kids and whatnot. And then the hospital called me at like 5 and they were like, okay, come on in. I'm like, okay. So we go in and they get me checked in and the OB that's on comes in and she looks at me and she goes, so we're doing a C-section. And I was like, the hell we are. I'll leave and I'll go to the other hospital before I do that. And she was like, well, everything I'm seeing is screaming big baby and he's going to get stuck and have a shoulder dystocia and it's going to be really bad. And I am not comfortable delivering you. And I was like, then don't find another doctor. And she was like, well, I'm not going to violate you, but I think you need to talk this over with your family and then come back. And then I'll come back and get your decision. I'm like, okay. So we're sitting there and my husband starts to like, well, she says, and I was like, no, they are not going to gut me and then not be there to help with 3 kids. It's not happening. And he was like, okay, if that's what you are sure of, then I support you. And I was like, yes. So the hospital has a midwife that works weekends only, which was convenient. So she comes in, she goes, hey, so we're having a VBAC? I was an accidental VBAC back in the 70s. And I'm like, that's cool. So her parents were on a military base. Her mom was in labor. They had an emergency C-section. And she was born in the hallway with her dad catching on accident because her labor was just like that quick. So she was like, you've got this, girl. Like, we can do this. And I'm like, awesome. So she's in there and she's like, you know what? You're already dilated to like, she's like, do you mind if I check you? Because the OB said that you were only at like a 3, but with the contractions you're having, I don't think that's right. And I was like, I can tell you yesterday morning I was at a 4.5. I was like, my body just didn't like her. And so she checks and she goes, oh girl, you're at like a stretchy 5. And I was like, I told you. So she's like, you want me to break your water? I'm like, yes, I do. I sure do. And so she's like, okay, and you're sure you're going on medicated? And I was like, absolutely. And she's like, all right, I need you to sit in the exact position I have you for the next 30 minutes after so we can make sure baby tolerates it. And I'm like, okay, golden. So she used the little sensor that they put on baby's head. I don't remember what it's called right now. So she used that to poke a small hole in my water to let it come out slowly, since I did have so much extra water, and to make sure that baby would tolerate it. So each contraction I had, it was like, whoosh, flooding the room. So she was like, man, I'm going to have to get a wet floor sign for this doorway, girl. I'm like, well, sorry, there was a lot of it. She's like, your belly's so small now. And I'm like, thank you, I think. So labor's progressing. I had back labor again. I had back labor with my first. I was standing on the side of the bed and my husband was like massaging my back with his fist. And so him and the nurse and my mom were alternating doing it. And they were like massaging so hard and doing counter pressure so hard that like my back was actually bruised the next day. But I kept telling them harder. And so when I'm in labor, I go into like this space where I can only answer yes or no questions. Like, I cannot verbally talk. So for the women that can verbally carry on sentences and laugh and cry and have stuff, kudos to you, but I don't know how you do it, because I can yes or no, and that's my limit. So she broke my water at like 8:30-ish that night, 8:30. And I was like, do you think we're going to have him before midnight? And she was like, I don't know. And I was like, I want him born after midnight. And she was like, okay, why? And I was like, because tomorrow is my husband's grandma's 90th birthday, and I can't give her a better gift than a grandbaby. And she was like, I was like, then a great grandbaby. And she was like, okay. And so I was laboring and laboring and laboring, and it was like 12:05. And she was like, hey girl, it's after midnight. And I was like, awesome. And so I, at that point, was on hands and knees in the bed, and I had my knees in together and my feet like out wide, because I was like, I know from listening to you guys, I need to open my hips as wide as I can. Like, I need to open them as wide as I can. And baby wasn't really tolerating the fetal monitor at that point. And so they flipped me over, and they were going to put an internal one in. She was like, oh, you're at 10 centimeters. You can push. And I was like, well, my body already is on its own. So, sorry. And so I was pushing and whatnot. And then baby got stuck. So he did have shoulder dystocia. It was a brief, like, 45 seconds. The OB that wanted to gut me is the one that had to come in and finish delivering, because the midwife was stronger, so she could apply that suprabic push pressure. She applied the pressure for the McRoberts, and the OB reached in and grabbed baby's left arm and pulled it out and delivered it, which resulted in breaking his humerus completely in half. Like, there was a gap. It was a bad break. And he wasn't breathing real great when he was finally fully born. Like, he wasn't breathing. The cord was wrapped twice around his neck. And so I think that that may have had part of why he couldn't be delivered as well. Like, not only being the broad shoulders, but I think that that cord was tethering him back. So he ended up going with respiratory. So he spent the first like hour in my room in the warmer so I could see him, but that was it, with the respiratory therapist and stuff. And he was in there for like an hour, and I was like, okay, are you guys taking him to the NICU? Are you not? Like, what is happening? And so they finally decided they were taking him to NICU, and I was like, okay, fine. So they were like, okay, like, you didn't tear. You have a tiny little, like, scratch maybe from one of his fingernails, if anything. And I was like, okay. And then they hooked me up to an IV. And I was like, I don't want an IV. I agreed to have it in my arm just as a precaution. I said no Pitocin. I don't want an IV. And they were like, well, it's in the doctor's orders so that you don't hemorrhage. And I was like, but I'm not currently hemorrhaging. And they would not remove it. Would not. So I was unmedicated, and they just had that Pitocin free flowing. And I was like, awesome. This hurts like more than giving birth. Cool. So baby was 8 pounds, 13 and a half ounces. So only 5.5 ounces more than my second. But he was bigger. He was also a week longer. So he was born at 39 weeks on his great-grandmother's birthday, which was awesome. And then the hospital, so the way that the big hospital is set up, so you go in and you are on the third floor for labor and delivery. Once you deliver, you are then moved to postpartum, which is on the second floor. The NICU is in a completely different section of the hospital on the fifth floor. So if you want to go see your baby, you have to walk like a half mile. And so they got me to the postpartum room and I was like, I want to go see my baby. I want my baby. I want my baby. I want my baby. And the nurse was like, you can't go until you pump. And I was like, why do I have to pump? And she was like, you have to pump before you can go. So I was like, fine, get me a pump. Like, here, I'll hand pump. Like, squeezing it out. Like, get me to my baby. I don't care. And so I hurried and pumped. And they were like, okay, we'll see if we have another nurse to take you. And I was like, just tell me where to go. Like, I will wheel myself there. I will walk. I don't, like, I'm fine. And so they were like, well, you can't go with your IV. And I was like, so unhook it. I don't need it. And so they finally let me go to see him. And my husband was with him the whole time. But I was like, no, I want to be with him. Like, I want to give my baby skin to skin. I want to nurse him. Like, I want to do all this stuff. My husband's phone is on 2%. Like, I want to get to my baby. So I finally got to him. Because he was in the NICU, you have to do the full surgical scrub. And then go in, and I'm like, okay, fine. So I'm in there, and I'm like, why does he have a feeding tube? And so they had a feeding tube down his throat. And I'm like, he's in here for oxygen. Why does he have that? Oh, it's just protocol. And I'm like, well, I'm breastfeeding. Well, you can do donor breast milk. And I'm like, I'm breastfeeding. I don't need to wait. Like, trust me. My milk is here. Like, I know it. And they were like, well, you're going to have to pump and then do it because we have to measure how much he's getting. And I was like, why? He's not here for eating. He doesn't have low blood sugar. There's no reason. And they were like, nope, that's what it is. And I was like, awesome. And then it was, well, he's here for the broken arm. We need to manage his pain. And I was like, you dose him with Tylenol. I don't understand. You let him nurse. Like, he'll be fine. And then it was, well, we need to keep him until he starts gaining weight. And I was like, he's a day and a half old. He's going to lose weight. And so it was a complete battle to get him out of the NICU. I had to threaten just taking him out of the NICU to go to our pediatrician to have his first checkup with her before they finally released him to me on day 4. And I was like, there's no reason to be here. No reason. Like, he's fine. And they're like, well, we need to make sure that you can room in. And I was like, I don't understand. I am here all day for all of his feedings. I am here, like, I'm literally going back and forth to my postpartum room and catnapping and coming back because you guys won't let me sleep in the NICU. Because they have, like, the little recliners. And I'm like, if you would just let me nap here, like, while he's in his bassinet, I wouldn't have to go back and forth. And they're like, well, we can't do that. And then the OB had been trying to discharge me, but I was never in my room. And I'm like, weird, because I'm with my baby. And so she finally had to come to the NICU to discharge me. Because I was like, sorry. Otherwise, I'll let you know when I'm back in my room. I walk past the nurse's station every time. And so it was just a total pain. So I did get my feedback.
You did.
But it was a total fight.
And that's exhausting. I'm sorry you had to go through all of that, but I'm proud of you throughout the whole thing. I'm noticing the theme is questioning and being curious and asking. Like, to everything, you have a question and response. And I think that's so great. And even though it can feel like a battle, I'm really proud of you for just having that curious mind and not just settling with, like, well, this is how it is. It's like, but why? Explain to me. Let there be a conversation. And then it leads to, like, oh, well, yeah, actually, why? Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. So that's what creates change.
Yes. Like, without the VBAC link, it would have been so much harder for me to have my VBAC because I didn't have, like, I knew to question it, but I didn't know how to question it. And the BRAIN acronym, GOLD. Absolute gold. And on my birth plan for my VBAC, I put it big bold letters across the top. BRAIN. And then I wrote the words down. And I was like, you will be asked to answer this for every recommendation you make before I consent. And I made
For those who don't know,
the nurse read it, and I made them sign that page.
Yes, tell us what the acronym is, Alexis.
It is benefits. So what are the benefits? The R is risks. What are the risks? The A is alternatives. What else can we do? The I is intuition. How does that sit with your gut? How does that sit with your partner's gut? If you're spiritual, how does that sit with Jesus or whoever it is you pray to? And the N is nothing. What if we don't do anything? What if we wait?
I like to add an S is for space. Can we kindly have the space to make this decision without you looking at us?
Yes. Can I have 15 minutes? Yeah. We're not like, we're religious kind of, we're spiritual. And so I was like, I need 15 minutes to consult. And they never like questioned it. And so, but it was definitely like, even doctor appointments, I was like, okay, what's the BRAIN? And they were like,
what's the BRAIN?
What? Like, how dare you? Why are you questioning me? But yes, ask like all sometimes. The questions.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for normalizing that even if you're a diabetic, like your babies aren't just automatically going to be big. And how even with your experience with shoulder dystocia, like just kind of normalizing how to navigate that. And yeah, so we appreciate you coming on today. Thank you for sharing your stories.
Yay. Type 1 is possible to have perfectly healthy, normal sized babies. Are they on the bigger side for me? A little bit, but they're still well within that normal range. Like they were all under 9 pounds.
Yeah.
So that's a normal sized baby.
Sure is, girl.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.